Hello, everybody. I am Simeon Mordecai Bittman, chef of a small treatment center with about four folks in my kitchen.
My name is James Gopp from Heirloom Fire, a fire-based catering company here in New England.
And this is the Figuratively Feasting podcast, where we talk about food and everything surrounding food in hopes that our passion and love for food will spread to you. Today, we have the lovely Magdalena of Magdalena Events and Design. I have had the very good fortune of working with the lovely Magda over the course of many years and have had the chance of watching her business grow and watching her grow and seeing her dedication and focus deepen. Peripherally from the outside. Magdalena has a ton of experience that she used to build her own business. And frankly, she's one of the best. And I think James would agree as well. Is there anything else?
She's pretty good. Yeah, she's pretty good.
She's pretty good.
she does all right.
She does all right.
Yeah, she does all right.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, for those of you who don't know, which might be a lot of folks, Magdalena and I started our businesses basically at the same time.
We did, yeah.
A long time ago. A lot of incredible adventures in between here and there. And certainly I can say with full confidence that Heirloom Fire wouldn't be where it is without you.
That's so very nice.
Yeah, so thank you very much. I'm really excited to crack into some fun stories.
Totally.
That you're willing to share with these people.
And we have a lot of those.
Yes, we certainly do. Yeah. But it's good. I think you guys are in for a treat.
Yeah, Magda's the best. Yeah. And we're in a really great position here to tap Magda's brain about the business and how best to operate within it. And also to get her thoughts on where this business is going. Where are events going in the future?
Yeah, right.
It's a weird time, as we all know. And it seemed like, I feel like we say that at the beginning of like every podcast.
Well,
it's a weird
it
time, man. Yeah, yeah,
no,
it's a weird time.
But it really
time.
Is, you know. I mean, it's changing. And tonight, you know, at this point in time when everyone is watching this, we will know who our president will be. I mean, tonight,
maybe
here we are.
Well.
Yeah, I wonder what's going on right now. Is the world falling apart out there?
Well, hey, I'm completely content in our little bunker right here.
Me too.
Our Aperol spritzes.
Yeah,
or
this is
Campari
lovely.
Spritzes.
Yeah.
That Magdalena threw together. So.
Thanks, Magda.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you.
I'll make more.
Perfect. So where do we want to kick this off?
I would like to kick this off by envisioning Magda as like a little girl running around.
Oh my God. Mm.
Can we do that? Can you paint the picture for us? Where are you?
Where am I as a little girl?
Yeah.
I'm probably spending a lot of time on my grandparents' farm. Hmm. That's what I always wanted to be like. Every single summer, winter break, every holiday, every weekend, I wanted to be with my grandparents, with their pigs and with their chickens.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. I really love the country. So, yeah. Huh. Just running around behind my grandma and just feeding the chickens. It was like the best thing ever.
Whoa. Yeah. Did you watch those chickens and animals go through the full process
Absolutely
of life?
Everything.
The full cycle of life?
Yeah. All the way till the end. Yeah.
Wow. Were you dissuaded at all by that?
No, not at all. It was always, you know, when the pig was being killed, it was always a big, big day. The whole family would come, and I remember, you know, I did remember the pigs crying, but then it was just honoring their lives right there at the farm. They had amazing lives, and they were treated very well. There was only like probably 10 of them. Huh. But it was...
Do they have names?
The cows did. I don't think pigs did. Hmm.
Did they raise the cows for meat or for milk?
For milk.
For milk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And but let's start even so everyone gets the full context here. You're talking about communist era Poland.
Yes.
It's very different from anything most of us that are listening to have ever experienced. I mean, I remember you telling me a story, I don't want to speak for you, but you were telling me a story of having to wait in line for food rations, right?
Yes, we did food rations and everything else. Like let's say even if the furniture were coming or carpets were coming to the store, there was always a line. Somebody would always hear about it. Mm. And they will line up and wait 24 hours. And then at the same time, let's say there was a delivery to grocery store, and my mom would put me in a line to grocery store, and she would go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then she would catch up. But that I remember standing those lines to get things. And then I remember those stores having nothing on shelves besides, like, you know, vinegar or just basics. Wow. And I was really grateful and lucky that my grandparents had a farm, so we could have eggs and meat and flour and everything we needed to get.
Was that regulated, their farm life? Yeah. Like, there was only a certain amount of animals they could raise or
I
any of that? Or was it just like if you had your own thing and, like, you had your
I think you could get as together. Much as you could, I guess, depending on your acreage, I guess. Yeah,
that's cool. So that was sort of the exception to the rule. If you could create a life for yourself that was relatively self-sustaining,
right? Yeah.
Then you could have as much as you want.
True, yeah, but then, you know, like, we had everything from the farm. The only things we need to buy was, like, sugar, vinegar, salt, things that my grandparents couldn't produce.
Yeah.
But then my mom, she was very skilled, and she would make us sweaters. She would make us everything. She was very... how do you say it?
Thrifty.
Thrifty. Yeah.
Thrifty.
So she would make everything for us. So we were pretty lucky to have that because there was nothing available.
Right. It's very interesting because obviously we're not going through anything like communist era Poland here, but you go to the grocery store at the beginning of COVID, obviously the shortages of toilet paper, flour was a big one. Everyone was learning how to make sourdough bread at the beginning.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's an interesting thing where I think that a lot of people listening that could relate in some degree.
Possibly, yes.
Not as the extreme, but, you know, the idea of going to the grocery store. I mean, we're experiencing something we've never experienced and probably thought we never would experience.
Exactly, right? So weird.
Yeah.
Was it that sort of overlying pressure of not quite having enough resources or not getting them as easily that eventually something to do or what?
Yeah,
what?
That was just life. Like, I didn't know any better. I didn't know the Western world.
Yeah.
So why would I worry? This was our reality. So this is how it was. Like, I remember vividly Christmas for me. Like, will always be the smell of oranges.
Yeah.
And nectarines, because that's what we had for Christmas.
Wow.
That's the only time a year we had oranges.
Isn't that crazy?
This
Sorry to interrupt you.
Always remember me of Christmas, oranges.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and this is something like, okay, this is Christmas, I'll get oranges, and we'll eat walnuts, and we'll have a good time. Because I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
I didn't know how other people do it, so this was fun to me.
Mm.
I looked forward to it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You appreciate it.
As you started getting, you must appreciate it. Like, oranges once a year, that's pretty awesome. I mean, because really, that is the best time to get them is in the winter because they're growing somewhere else in the world, of course, but they're delicious. Mm-hmm. So every winter.
From Spain or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
You guys probably from Spain.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So as you started getting older, did you start realizing that there was something like difficult about living there and that you wanted to leave it? Or
it's a great question.
I
guess not. It doesn't seem like it did.
I think at that time Germany at that time was the place to be. So if you had some connections with Germany, you could get chocolates or you could get jeans or you could get Barbie dolls. That was the thing, you know? But then everything changed after communism went down and 90s happened. And then we had everything, like as everybody else. Maybe not as everybody else, but...
Yeah.
We did have things. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I just seem to remember when I was younger, every year we used to go to Lake George.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of these outlets up there, Lake George, New York. And there'd be specifically a Tommy Hilfiger outlet and be tons of Europeans that would come there. And they were like camp counselors.
Yeah.
And they would flock to that place because they were saying over where they were, Tommy Hilfiger and Gap and Polo was just ridiculously expensive.
Right. So I had to, when I was a teenager, I actually worked at my friend's father's place where he was producing like pickled cucumbers. So I worked all summer to get those Levi's jeans, you know, to buy this Levi's jeans and this like really cool watch that was actually, you know, trending right now. And I worked all summer to get that. So just imagine, you have to work 3 months to get jeans and a watch.
Slanging pickles?
Yes.
Awesome. Were the pickles good?
Yeah, it was so good.
Really?
Yeah. Ah. And then we got like blueberries and we were doing blueberry jams or something, you know, depending on the season. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was fun.
Oh, it's so cool.
I mean, I hope you don't mind sharing too. Sorry, we're jumping around a little bit here, but one of my favorite stories is, you know, you guys and your family making all this crazy alcohol. Like the stills.
Oh my God. It was like, illegal.
Yeah, of course. In like hidden in the barns, like in the hay, right? These big, beautiful glass stills.
Giant glass stills. And I would watch this brandy just dripping, you know, those little intricate glass things.
Wow.
It was awesome. Yeah. My grandpa used to make a lot of brandies. And
And I can attest, I've had a few. And
I still
really
have
special.
Those. I have like, they're very special to me. My grandpa is passed away many years ago, but I still have those little brandies he made, like those little crafts that I treasure, you know, and I smell it sometimes just to remind me of those times. Yeah.
Oh man, that's so awesome. So as you got older, you eventually obviously made the decision to move to the States.
Right.
Did you come here first from Poland? Or did you go anywhere else?
No, I came from Poland. Straight from Poland, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
What spurred that decision?
It's a long story, but just to keep it short, when I was probably like maybe second...
Okay, that was good. Thanks.
Bye.
I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. Go on.
When I was probably in second, third, or third grade, it was my dream to learn to speak English. And at that time, post-communism Poland, they only taught us, you know, German and Russian.
Yeah.
But it was my dream. So I think when I was fourth grade, when my parents found a private teacher who would come to my house twice a week for an hour, and he would teach me English. So then I remember my father used to go to America all the time, back and forth. But then I was in high school and I still really wanted to like speak English, and like I was just so fascinated by the whole idea of being American or just the life over there.
What was your dad doing in the States?
He was just coming here to support the family. But then I went to college. I was in law school and I hated it.
Law school.
Yeah, 2 years in law school. And I remember my sister went, beginning of summer, it was in June, my sister went to visit my father in the States. And she was calling me every day, Magda, please come, I want you to come. And I'm like, you know what? I hate this school, fuck it, I'm just gonna go.
Awesome.
So I bought a ticket in September and I flew. But I did go there because I had few things I really wanted to do. I really wanted to go and see you two playing live.
Freaking you too.
Yeah, I knew I couldn't do it in Poland. And I was just like, you know what? I really want to do it. And then I really wanted to go to college in New York.
So did you know what you wanted to study, or you just wanted to go to college?
I didn't know. Yeah. I wanted to be international relations, like ambassador or working in the UN. And so I did go to college, and I graduated with international relations. But then the more I learned about the industry and
you were working at the industry while you were at school.
I did. I took some internships. Yes.
Gotcha.
And the more I learned, the more I hated it. I just hated the bureaucracy. I hated the whole politics of it. So I just didn't pursue it. But I did graduate with
that. How disappointing that must have been to invest all that time. But
no, I've learned a lot. And it was such an adventure to be in American college as opposed to compared to like Polish college. It was a huge difference. Like in Poland, I would be like math. I would be probably like C-. Here I would be like A+. And I felt like a genius.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Bunch of idiots here.
No, basically.
That's not what I'm trying to say.
Huh?
Yeah, but I just felt good. And it was a little bit easier than being in college in Poland. So I kind of enjoyed it. I liked it.
Well, that's great. You know, and people give you two so much shit about when they gave everyone that, you know, that album on their phone. What a shame, you know, like those guys are like on top of their stuff. I remember they were, you know, traveling around New York City in the back of a flatbed truck, just performing concerts live in the streets of New York City. And can you imagine like that one fatal misstep? They produced an album. They just wanted to give away everyone for free. And everyone's like, F you. Like, I don't want you on my phone. It's like, oh, you know, that's, it's a bummer.
So when you were at college, you were also waitressing.
Yes, so you were in New York. Experienced a lot, seen a lot, learned a lot.
Paying your way through school.
That's it. I paid my whole college with cash from being a waitress. Yeah.
Was that your introduction to the hospitality world, or did you do any of that?
I would say so, yeah.
You didn't do any of that in Poland?
No. It would never cross my mind to be a waitress in Poland. In Poland, it would be a career to be a waitress. It's different than here, yeah.
And just, yeah, I mean, take note. She, did you hear what she just said? She paid for college in cash from waitressing. So that means studying and working her tail off.
I worked.
And actually paying for college with that money.
I probably worked 60 hours a week and then 20 hours in college. It was insane. I would sleep in a subway. I would fall asleep and wake up in the last station because I just overslept. Oh, seriously.
Crazy. Yeah. I love some of those stories you have too, James, of that when you were going to cooking school.
Yeah.
Like that hardcore, rigorous schedule you put yourself through.
I wish that I had that energy now. Could I take a little bottle of that? You know, that's because I think back in that, if I had to do it again right now, I mean, it's hard to say, right? Mind over matter. Yeah. I would do it, yeah. But, I mean, even on Sundays, that's the thing is, like, I think about after events on Sundays, I'm completely dead to the world.
But at that time, we had certain goals, and no matter what, we had to do it.
Yeah.
It didn't matter.
Yeah, I think there's parts of us that just, like, kick in to get it done, and they'll just stay there until the job is done, and then you can fall apart.
Yeah. But, exactly. You know what, like, being in New York and, like, being in college, I met so many good people, I would party my ass off all the time.
Work hard,
even
hard.
Though I worked so much and I was in college.
Sure.
And it was just so much fun. Probably the best time of my life. And I was exhausted, but I also made a lot of money. Yeah. You know, I traveled, I paid my college, and it was just like awesome.
Wow. Really awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Dang, I don't know. I think that's just an inspiring story that you just worked that hard and you made sure you had fun. Work hard, play hard. You're still here to tell
still
the story.
Still here, still alive. Yeah. Right.
Somehow.
Yeah.
Not for a lack of trying.
Yeah. So you got out of school.
Yes.
And then what? Like, you just found yourself more, you kept waitressing? You kept that job?
No, actually, I was doing my last year, last 6 months, for senior. Senior?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I went one time with my friends camping here in the Berkshires.
Huh.
And I met someone.
Ah.
So I graduated from college. We started dating. So I graduated from college. And then I moved here to the Berkshires. And I found myself not knowing what to do. Like, I graduated with this degree and I wanted to do this big thing. And there is nothing here for me to do.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
So I started a job at local restaurant bartending.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I got into industry here, basically. Then my manager, he changed the jobs and he was working at the catering company. And I was fed up with working at the restaurant. So he asked me if I want to come over and do some catering. That's how it all started.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. I wondered how you made that transition.
And then I met James.
Yes.
You came on board for the catering company too, right?
Yes.
And we started working together. And then I got a full-time job over there, managing front of the house, and you were managing...
Managing the kitchen part of it, yeah. We developed a great working relationship, you know, between... I mean, we became like sidekicks the whole time. You know, you were leading that front, and I was leading the kitchen events. And we whipped that place into shape. Learned a ton along the way.
Oh, my God. There was like nobody to... teach us anything.
Exactly.
We were just self-taught, and we just learned so much within those 3 years, I think, right?
Yep, it's about 3 years, yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. And isn't it crazy to think about, too? I remember the very first events, not being able to sleep the night before the events. I mean, I just constantly was running through things, running through every possible scenario that could have gone wrong, checking everything off, and then, maybe in the end of the night, getting 1 or 2 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now I sleep like...
Stressful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
Totally awesome when a back of house and front of house person can connect that way. Like when someone who runs the kitchen and someone who runs the front can connect.
We had.
Not to mention, like, learn together. Yeah.
We got each other's backs all the time, right?
Yeah. I mean, to the point where it was really great because we could actually communicate. And I think a lot, we may have touched upon this a little bit, like working in kitchens, but to be able to communicate with somebody without actually having to verbally communicate, you just know each other's body language. You know what needs to do. Like, heirloom fire started. I asked you to come and help me staff the front of the house and train my front of the house. And as our businesses were both sort of starting off, we had this symbiotic relationship where I would recommend all my clients to you and vice versa. But way back in the day, like before we even had a space, we would go and do tastings in clients' homes.
we would go to the city all the time.
Yeah, go to the city. I remember this one specific tasting we did was in Brooklyn. And, you know, the rest of the apartments usually had elevators or they're in the first floor, second floor. This is in the fifth floor.
Yeah,
tiny place. And it was in the middle of the summertime and it was so stuffy. And we were like, I was probably sweating and huffing heading up the stairs. And we did a tasting. But that was always the cool thing is that we were able to meet people, come into their home turf. And you would think, in theory, okay, well, this is going to make someone feel uncomfortable going to their kitchen, preparing all this stuff. Mm. But we were able to go into their turf and have and produce something beautiful in the middle of their home.
It was actually fun, a lot of fun. It was very special and very...
Yeah, very unique.
Mm-hmm.
It's very different than... I mean, this is, you know, doing the tastings now are fantastic, but that was a whole other different level. It felt like the early days. You know, I think with a lot of folks out there, if you're, entrepreneurs or business owners... In those first couple of years, enjoy them because that's when the craziest stories happen. You know, you're kind of running and gunning. You don't know what your profit margins are. You're just kind of hoping you're making money. Then as you start to get into like year three, it typically happens. You start really cracking into the accounts and looking at, okay, what's making money, what's not. All right, I got to stop doing this. We have to start charging for this. And it's good for business sense, but you start limiting, I find, and I hear it from a lot of the people, you start limiting stories because so many things happen from the unknown. Huh. And some of those times where you may be sacrificing profit, but you're actually getting wonderful, beautiful stories in return.
Right.
Well, speaking of which, can we just start popcorning out some stories? I want to hear stories. So, I'll just sit here like a little bystander and just laugh. And
yeah, for sure. I mean, is there anything else that you had questions about regarding her catering life?
Just finish with that, and then we go to the stories, because that's how everything started.
Yeah.
Because we were in this catering company, and...
Cool.
I found myself being asked all the time by the clients what to do, whom to get, how to get it, what to get, how many. And it's like all those little intricate details that I learned throughout the years, teaching myself just doing those events.
Right.
And at that time, I guess there were not as many wedding planners or event planners.
Probably not. I mean, I think there probably was, but maybe just not working with that company. I mean, honestly, like when I started there, we were charging like 80, 90 bucks a head.
Crazy.
Which is such a low money considering what sort of level we were putting out. When I left there, we were charging $200 a head.
Yeah.
So we, and not only that, they were doing like 10 events. And when we left, we were able to do it in such a way and build that business where we could take multiple events in one day. Not that that's ideal, and it a lot of times didn't work out, but we could at least take two events in one day. We would do like 50 events in a year.
Hmm.
So, you know, we helped really grow that thing. And through that, you were learning how to do 50, you know, schedule 50 events a year, which is kind of crazy.
But, you know, like I found myself like watching those if there were planners, some planners or like photographers, caterers, like everybody. I was just like absorbing everything.
Sponge, yeah.
Yes. And then at some point I found myself like, oh my God, I know not everything, but I know the basics. I know enough to help them.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think the breaking point for me was I asked my boss for a raise at that time. And it was a tough one. And I think I got maybe 25% raise. And I was so pissed. So pissed because I put all my heart into this company and developing myself, learning and everything. And then I said, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to quit and open up my own business.
Nice.
Because I'm too smart for this. I'm wasting my time here. And I already developed those connections. And I know what I'm doing. And I know I'll be good with this.
Yeah.
And I have a huge history of, I've learned so much throughout the years. Being in New York City, being in the Berkshires, being everywhere.
Mm. Right. You even spent some time in England as well.
I spent some time in England.
And there's something to be said, too, for knowing your worth. You know, and that was, I think... You know, unfortunately, there's a reason why we're both no longer there, and there's a reason why that business is no longer around. I mean, with the case with any business, as anybody will tell you, especially during COVID times, any business is just a few bad decisions away from being out of business. And you really got to take care of your staff, because at the end of the day, they're the ones that enable you to be able to focus and move in a creative direction. You can trust them to do their things. Mm. And, basically trust them to run your business. if they're good. And if they're good, better hold on to them, especially in the Berkshires, because Simi and I can both tell you the talent pool here is very, very challenging because I think of our close vicinity to New York City and to Boston. But who knows? Fingers crossed. And hopefully we can cultivate more of a scene in this area because there's a lot in this area in the Hudson Valley.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful location, yeah. Not just crazy opportunities and busy, 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 grind, grind, grind.
Yeah, totally. So, and there's a lot of talent in upper management and owners, chefs, event planners, people who are doing their own thing. Like James here is a prime example, and so is Magdalena. And is anybody going to say so are you? No. Anyways, and so up here in the upper echelon of folks who are really paving the way and are really passionate about what they're doing, it's here. It's definitely here. And we often need support. We need teams to build and to take good care of.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's such a beautiful area. I mean, so many people retire, well, not really retire, but I guess in a weird way, retire out of the city to move here pre-COVID time to raise a family. Yeah. Not only is it a great place to raise a family, it's a great place to live. It's a great place to exist, to create something really special. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, when I first moved here, I felt like, even if I'm working all the time, I felt like I'm on vacation because it just feels so different and people are so nice. And it's like everything is so nice. You can go hiking right outside your doors.
Yeah.
And it was so different. And like every time I had to go and visit my friends in a city, it was tough for me because I wanted to stay here, you know, even though I miss my friends. So I would go for a weekend, but then I was glad to come back because like everything just goes away, you know, all the stress. You go to the city and it's like you immediately put your elbows out because that's how you walk there.
Yeah,
know, to get anywhere, and then you have to just like get to spaces, you know.
Yeah,
you get this like energy, you know, totally. And then you come back and it's like, nice in here.
Definitely. Yeah, it's so funny. It's like that energy in the city is definitely frenetic and throws us off and it gets you all wound up.
Yeah.
Also, I've often found that it gives folks the upper hand a little bit when they come to the Berkshires to relocate and to start a business because you do develop a certain like get up and go kind of ethic of being in the city. Because everybody's moving and everybody's going and people are really focused and it's like really serious business all the time. So when you come here, if you have just like a little piece of that, you can't have too much because then everybody gets upset with you.
Yeah.
And I think you're just, you know, too much of a, you know, a bully or whatever. But if you've got that right little balance to just keep pushing and persevere because you've seen it happen in the city so much that, I don't know, I think it gives you an advantage.
I think it does, for sure. And we certainly need more people like that here, I think.
You know? I wish we had more young people here in the Berkshires.
As do I. And that's something we need to work on here. It needs to figure out why it's too expensive.
Yeah.
It's so expensive to live here. I mean, that's makes it hard for any business to really thrive here. But anyhow, that's a topic for another time. Why don't we crack into a little bit of stories now?
Yeah,
a little story time with Magda. Yeah. How do you want to start? I mean, there's so many stories.
You could probably do like a reality show of like 10 seasons.
Yeah.
Of all the stories. No, seriously. This is like every time there's something, you know? Whoa.
All right. How about this?
Yeah, let's categorize something.
How about think of a story that you guys share of an event or a night where things were like going south quickly and stuff was really going down.
Yeah. There's a lot.
And you somehow pulled it together.
Yeah.
And like came together and like pulled it back on track and had the night end up awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I think of a lot, but what comes to your mind?
Tennessee.
Tennessee. Oh, yeah.
Were you there?
No. I've just heard stories forever about
so,
it.
So what are you thinking?
I think of the one we discussed last podcast, Taft Farms.
All right, yeah.
Tell us about Tennessee.
Tennessee.
I think
yeah.
you should start with telling about Tennessee.
I mean, there's so much to talk
about.
Canada,
like,
where do you want to start? But I mean, Tennessee is like we were driving down. That we were talking about the truck too.
Truck and the chicken night.
Yeah.
The rehearsal dinner.
Yeah. So okay. You're going to jump in.
Yeah,
obviously,
I will.
Because this is about you. It's not about me, even as much
it's
as
always
I
about you, Jim.
Want it to be about me all the time.
It's always about
no,
him.
I'm kidding.
He's like caresses yeah, the microphone.
It's like yeah, caressing it's my, yeah, this is my handle on the world. No. So
creepy now.
A little creepy, yeah.
Tennessee was insane. So, okay, let's preface it, though. That was 2018. We've touched about this in another podcast. It was insane.
Did?
Yeah, well, you know. But before Tennessee, the week before Tennessee, I mean, 4 days or so before Tennessee,
Maryland.
We were in Maryland. Magdalena was there for that as well. But you were there for that, Simeon. And that was insane.
Yeah.
And that was a super quick turnaround. Like, we flew down. We had to fly down to Tennessee, and we had to get all the gear cleaned up and everything else, and that truck had to be out of the Berkshires. So we came back on Sunday morning, the 300-person party, rained for 2 weeks straight. It was insane.
It was like mud.
Up
to your knees.
It was unreal. Remember?
People were like losing their boots in the mud.
Yeah.
Just get sucked out.
Yeah. Yeah, it was that horrible. You know, and that was rugged. Yeah. But for me, though, considering that was our second event of the season, the first one we did was in Williamstown.
Oh,
it was like in the Williamstown, Vermont border. Were you there for that?
No.
That was cool. Like boned out a whole small pig and did a porchetta, but left its head on and spun it around a fire basket.
Cool.
That was super cool. Also rained. But the Tennessee event was the Maryland event was just crazy. So we had to come home on Sunday, and it wasn't that far. I think it was maybe 6 or 8 hours or so.
Mm-hmm.
We came back. All the gear had to be cleaned up, redid up, packed up, and then taken off. I think on Wednesday is when they had to leave. So they had 1 day off, and they had basically a day and a half to get everything packed back up. They drove down Thursday morning. You came down the second day.
Hmm.
No, you didn't come to Tennessee. I'm sorry.
No.
No. So we all had to go down on Wednesday.
Thursday.
I think it was Thursday.
No. Wednesday. We flew Wednesday. Yeah.
So meanwhile, while all that's happening here, in
the truck
kitchen
is driving.
And the truck and all that. What are you doing to get ready and get prepared?
Good question.
We're just partying.
You're just partying?
No,
or
just
are you
kidding,
doing
just
all the
kidding.
Work?
No,
yeah,
no, no.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you probably just were packing. We went and get a big van. It's a 12-person van. Well, we got that after we landed in Tennessee. We got a
pretty like the client hitting you up.
Oh, my God. You know what happened that morning? I picked up you and Catherine. Do you remember that?
Something. Mike.
Man. No.
No, we flew together.
We did, but I remember, and this is a bit graphic. I'm sorry. I don't know what happened. The night before, I think I had 2 beers before I...
Oh, my God.
Do you
remember
this?
Yes. And we are driving to the airport.
Down in Hartford.
Yes.
And we're driving, and it was you, me, and Catherine, right? And all of a sudden, like, I had 2 beers the night before, and it might have been just the nerves of, like, the craziness and the lack of sleep. I'm driving with you, and I said, Magdalena, I said, I think I need to pull over and get sick. You're like, well, go ahead and do it. And I went and did that, and I felt so hungry. I had 2 beers the
you
night before.
You got sick of something.
Something happened.
You had
happened.
This, like, disgusting burrito breakfast thing.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Old Cumberland Farms gas station special. Yeah.
that's
probably what it was.
Sausage.
Dude, yeah.
You ate some old sausage,
I think
didn't
so.
You?
And
that's
it rocked me, dude. So we're getting in. We're getting, you know, we check into the airport. I feel sick all morning, right?
Oh,
and
man.
Then we're flying in the airplane. So and, like, when you're taking off, I'm like, oh, boy, here we go. But thankfully, nothing happened. But I remember just putting my hood up and my sunglasses on and just laying there. Mike was, like, 5 seats ahead of me and took a picture, like, through the selfie thing. It's like, you looked like the Unabomber back there. Just, like, all geared up, just sleeping like that. Oh, I felt so miserable. Yeah, so it was you, me, Townsend, Mike. I think that's it. We all went down early, and we went to the Prince's Fried Chicken.
Oh, my God.
Nice.
Super hot.
Really good, right?
Yeah, it was really good. After we landed there, we spent the day sort of just laying the ground out,
right.
Getting all of our food.
We get some produce.
Yeah, we had to get produce.
We lined up
first,
seafood, yeah.
Right out of the hotel, right out of the airport, we got our van, and then we lined up where we're eating our seafood
all
from,
right.
Which was from Husk.
And who's talking to clients at this point? Is there, like, a lot of back and forth still with clients,
no,
or is it pretty
no.
much
there was a
done
different,
at that point?
This was a different wedding planner. Thankfully, Magdalena has been very gracious when we do big events because of our working relationship to come along and sort of be that conduit between the planner and us because she just knows so well and she's a true ace. So, of course. So we had to go pick up seafood at a restaurant. We went to Husk. It was amazing. And then we had to go a bunch of different places. Sean Brock gave me a bunch of like awesome locations to get beef from and all this stuff. So
awesome.
Went and did all that. We did the rehearsal dinner. So thing was, I'm sitting there waiting in this golf cart. Now this is like to date the longest, or at that time, the longest event we had done from home base. Mm. The guys drove down, 17 hours driving. I'm sitting there waiting in a golf cart, waiting, texting with the guy in the passenger seat, Mark, like where they are. Then all of a sudden I hear him coming down the reefer, and I'm like, oh my God, I felt so excited, right? We came, we did the whole rehearsal dinner. It was, they wanted to just to like do a real simple like fried chicken situation too. Beautiful chickens, been brined for 2 days. Fried in cauldrons over the fire.
And we are in the South, so you have to make this.
You gotta make it proper.
Expectations are really high, really high. And the location for the dinner is actually in the other property, which was kind of strange. But so my sous chef and I are down there figuring that stuff out. Come back, and the dude that was working used all of the flour. How? I don't know. We had a lot of flour, so we were out of it.
Yeah.
I heard this story.
And you did? So. Yeah, we're like, well, what are we gonna do? So Magdalena, can you go out? How did it go? I don't. That part's a bit foggy to me.
You asked me, can you get 20 pounds of flour? And we are in the middle of nowhere.
And it's late now. We're talking like
2 hours before the event, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, something like that. And it's late. Most stores are probably like in the middle. Yeah, middle of nowhere.
Middle of nowhere.
No
middle of Tennessee. Nothing.
Yeah. Franklin, Tennessee.
Yeah.
And this is it. Here it comes. This is what it takes. This is what it takes to make it happen right now.
Take notes.
Here we go.
Take notes. So I jumped into the van.
Yep.
And I don't think I had any cell phone service. So I just drove straight. Like the roads, I kind of knew. So I drove to this store that looked like a gas station, right? We passed it by. So I thought, this was the closest store. So I was like, maybe I can get some flour over there. I got in there. It's closed. I'm knocking on the door. I'm banging on the door. Nothing. It's closed. And I hear this lady, like she has a house next door, and she's like, can I help you? So I explain to her the situation. We're doing this rehearsal dinner. We are short on flour. I need like 20 pounds of flour. Can you help us? And she's like, well, I wish I could help you, but I actually need some flour as well. But if you drive straight for 2 miles and take a right, cross the bridge, take a left, and like she gave me all this like, oh my god, how am I going to remember this? But she said, you'll find this little town and there's this place, looks like nothing, just go in there and ask for it.
Okay.
So I drove. I don't know how I found it, but I did find it.
Yeah, which is also an amazing feat, because like when you're under stress like that and time and
it's
all
like,
that, and you have
say,
no idea where
right
you are,
or left.
Yeah, you gotta like listen and take in instructions like that. Oh man!
So I'm driving through this little town,
yeah,
and I see this. What did I see? Oh, I see this like a deli, almost like a store, but it looks like a venue for bands, but it also looks like a restaurant. So I just stopped there. It must be the place, right?
Yeah.
All the people are going there, so that must be the place. So I walk in, and it's like this like little buffet place, and there's like shelves with like grocery store, and there's a band playing. I'm like, where am I?
What is this?
So I go into those shelves, I dive in, I don't see any flour.
No.
So I go to the front desk, those ladies who I guess get cash for all this like buffet thing. And I explained her situation again, that we are doing this fried chicken, it's rehearsal dinner, I need 20 pounds of flour. And she's like, let me see what I can do. She runs to the kitchen and she comes back with 25 pound bag of flour.
25 pound bag.
Giant bag of flour.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
And then she's like, what do you want to pay for it? I'm like, whatever you want me to pay,
yeah,
I don't
this
care.
Price, this point, I'll pay
and
$500.
She's like, $17. I'm like, okay.
And why'd you charge me $50? You gotta make a little money on it. Yeah. Well done. No. But on a side note, I mean, that's what I've always appreciated about Magdalena, which I've never. That's something I don't know if that comes back from your childhood, the way you. Your mother had instilled being thrifty.
That's cool. Yeah, I was hoping we'd get back around to this.
And that sort of upbringing that, like just making it happen no matter what. And there's been countless amount of times. I mean, way back at the other catering company, when the rentals, nobody was checking. Rentals. It was like the Wild West. And the rentals were not being properly checked, and we'd be missing bowls, pitchers, et cetera, whatever. You would disappear and materialize with exactly what we needed every single time. So, and also, with a smile on your face. I mean, literally. literally, heaven forbid, we don't ever want this to happen, but the tent could be burning down behind her, but she have a huge smile on her face. Oh, what do you need? Oh, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Are you good? Good. And that's how it goes.
I guess you...
That's a gift. And you don't. I don't think you fully understand that. That's a very rare talent.
How did you get that?
You know, as a child, we didn't have many toys or anything like that. So we had to make our own toys. Mm. You know, we had this, like, sometimes, once in a while, somebody would bring Russian dolls or whatever. It was
like the matryoshkas, like the little cups things.
Or just, like, these plastic dolls that didn't do anything and didn't have eyes, or you poke their eyes. And just
why were you poking their eyes?
She's weird. Because she's weird.
So anyway, you have to make your own toys. So we very often would make our own toys, especially at my grandma's farm. It was, like, endless. You could get anything anywhere. So me and my sister would build, like, we would take bricks and we would build, like, little stores or, like, banks or houses. And we would just play the game, you know? And leaves would be the money. And you would just learn how to do things, you know? Nothing is impossible. And your imagination, I think that's what it is.
Well,
can make wonders,
you know? Well, that's interesting. So would you say that... doing the kind of work that you do enables you to still in some way use your imagination?
Absolutely, yeah. There is no such a thing like, oh, this is impossible. Like, everything is possible. You just have to really think about it, you know?
Feels like in a lot of ways, I think the key to happiness is chasing our childhood.
Maybe it is.
The happiness that we were able to obtain. And, you know, when you sit down and have a meal, you're reminded of an experience that you once had. But to you think of what true happiness was when you're a child, it's very simple.
And to me, that kind of brings back to Christmas and the smells of orange or whatever, right? So when I was actually here in the U.S., I would make my own, like, Christmas ornaments. I would dehydrate, like, pomegranates and oranges and cinnamon. I would create those awesome, like, arrangements. And maybe that's how, you know, like, kind of I could bring that memory and that childhood and those smells and the memories back and
that's
just create something cool and awesome.
Yeah. So it's also kind of like Citizen Kane. You familiar with that?
Yeah.
Rosebud?
Yeah.
The slate, you familiar with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably like that.
And you remember that one time? I was making those wreaths. And I was selling them Great Barrington Christmas market.
You
came by one time by accident. Or you planned, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I was selling those Christmas wreaths and with, like...
dried slices.
And and my mom taught me how to do those. And I would have, like, cinnamon sticks and lots of oranges and other, like, little props that I would just gather or forage. Nothing was bought. Yeah.
Now, you also build a lot of your own props for... your work too, right?
Yes, yeah.
I remember there was an event. Well, there's one piece of equipment that's still in a chest of stuff that we take out every time we're setting up charcuterie boards.
That's been like
for
6 years.
The event.
Yeah, it was from the very first.
Birch.
That was from the very first heirloom fire event, the very first one. And so, a little history lesson on that as well. I've told the story about how I had Lyme disease and how my cousin and I built the whole company in basically 5 days. But also Magdalena helped me out with that, where she was literally sewing tablecloths, building props. I mean, a bunch of like a little stack of shellacked birch logs with some sort
rope.
Of fiber rope running through it. And that's survived for 6 years and it gets used.
Yeah, it's banged around too.
Good.
Yeah, it does look good. Yeah. It's holding together. And there was an event where you made like, it was kind of like a cement bowl for one of the courses.
Yeah,
busted those out of nowhere.
That was and I have that at my house. Still.
I do
and
too.
It holds water really well. You threw away so many of them from that event. It was so.
No, I kept them. I kept a lot.
I
gave away a lot.
No, I'm just kidding.
But I created those. Cement bowls where we kept our like hidden props.
On the table.
Yeah.
And then I created those like literal cement bowls because it was cement mine.
It was
a cave.
Yep.
So I would kind of try to get to that history of it. So part of the table layout, table decor was those cement props.
Yeah.
To pay homage. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's so a fun thing. So all the rest of the ticketed dinners generally work with Magdalena on those. And it gives us, you know, I have the sort of control of the food and the experience like that, but Magdalena has her own vision of how she wants the design to be, tablescapes.
And sometimes we come and brainstorm on menu and like things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's really what I was getting to, is that we'll usually all sit down and have ideas and you'll add something to the conversation where...
Usually we go on like a long hikes and we just, I think the nature does
therapeutic,
it for
us. For sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we come up with those crazy ideas because we see something and there was like, what about this, right?
Often yes.
It happened so many times.
Yes, and there's so many beautiful spots. I mean, like Ashantilly Gardens.
Yeah.
Well, that would have been great to do something up there, perhaps down the road.
One day.
One day. What was the most challenging experience you had?
Oh, boy. That's a tough one.
And there's a lot to pick from, but...
Yeah, there's a lot of stories probably, but you know what? The first ever event, first ever like on my own, was at a wedding at Norman Rockwell Museum.
Oh, yeah.
The couple, the bride and groom, they had a history of, like, they had a little, like, a summer cottage at the Stockbridge Bowl.
Okay.
And it was, like, a little community of little cottages.
Yeah.
So that's where they wanted to do their ceremony. And then we would bus everyone to Norman Rockwell.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's wrong with Norman Rockwell?
No.
You see where it's going, the most difficult?
Yeah.
What? You don't know it.
I do know it. Because I was doing an event that day as well.
Are you doing?
Yeah. I was with Sean, and I suffered the same fate, but you tell yours.
Suffered the same fate. So the ceremony was supposed to be 4 o'clock. I'm looking at the radar, and it shows like 100% storm, like huge storm. The groom doesn't want to hear it. He's like, it's not going to rain. I believe it's not going to rain. I'm like, it's going to rain. I'm like holding the radar. It's going to rain. And he's like, no, it's not going to rain.
Okay.
So I'm trying to convince my, I think it was harpist or the violin player. She doesn't even want to put out her equipment because it will just like get destroyed with the humidity and the rain. And my lighting person is like showing me the radar. So I was like, this is not going to happen. I'm like, I know, but I can't convince the groom. And he still believes we can do it.
Wow. Okay.
Meantime, I know it's not going to happen. And we are going to get hit like, right at 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't convince him. I know he'll finally, you know, say like, we have to do something. So meantime, I called Norman Rockwell and said, like, please take all the tables, push all the tables that we are set up on the patio under the tent for the ceremony. Push them however you can and put all the chairs right in the front.
Okay.
4 o'clock comes in.
Bam.
Gets dark. Really dark. And guess what?
Yeah.
It didn't rain.
Yeah, right.
And actually, 10 minutes before, I sent someone to Red Lion Inn to pick up some umbrellas. Huh. But I had those, like, 2 or 3 school buses. And this is this, like, little lake community. So they all parked somewhere. And I don't know where they are. Mm. There's no cell phone service. So I know it's going to rain. Like, it's going to hit us in a minute. And it did. It did just, like, hit us hard. So all those guests standing on that beach waiting for a ceremony, they had to run to the woods just to get some cover because the umbrellas didn't come yet.
Oh, man.
You know, and meantime, I'm running and trying to find those buses. You know, just in those little streets, I'm trying to find those buses to put all those guests in those buses so they don't get soaking wet. I did find them. They kind of came in, and all the guests came to the went to those buses.
Oof.
Yeah, we had to like cancel the ceremony, and then. But I told the groom, I have a plan B. We're gonna do it in Norman Rockwell on the terrace. Everything is ready. Just relax. And I called the bride. It's gonna be fine. So they say, so I'm trying. I'm driving. I'm trying to beat them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
To the Norman Rock.
Yeah, I bet you are.
Oof.
And I got there, and it's a nightmare.
Mm.
The whole terrace is flooded.
Oh,
they all put the stairs, the chairs. But we have probably a feet of water on the terrace, just pouring from the tent. Inside the terrace, and I see all those people shoveling the water out of it because that little thing that's in the middle of the drainage couldn't take so much water.
Yeah.
Right. So I just jump in there, and we all shoveling the water out. I told the staff to
like
hold the bus. I called the buses. I called the buses. Can you take the, like a detour, like a scenic route or something? Can you just come like slower? So we are shoveling the water, trying to dry everything.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so the buses came finally. All the guests rushed into the museum, so we kind of let them go through the galleries a little bit.
Nice.
While we all just like tried to dry everything out and equipment and everything else, you know, it was just horrible. We finally did it. And then, so we had the ceremony. I think it was unplugged because it was so dangerous to have all the electricity.
Yeah.
So then all the guests went to the cocktail hour in the galleries again. Just touring the galleries for an hour and a half. And we are trying to dry all the linen, glasses,
everything else,
chairs. And it was just put everything together. Yeah. So we had a great team. We did it. I don't know how we did it, but... That was my first event.
And perfect. It's like the perfect first event. Though.
I don't think the bride and groom know the back of the story or will ever know. Well, but
perfect.
Yeah, they shouldn't, but hopefully it's been time enough so that maybe if they're listening, they would appreciate it. Yeah, that's crazy. So, all right, now we've gone through those things. What is a particular event that you're really proud about or something, you're an accomplishment, you know,
that's
with your professional career?
Very good question. There are so many good events and awesome clients. It's really hard to pick one event, but sure. The one that comes to mind first, I guess, was the last year's event at Gather Green. It's in Hudson Valley, Coxsackie.
Oh, yeah.
This couple, they were amazing. So they spent their whole life, like childhood, camping like me. We've met actually in Hudson, and they told me about this, like their childhood, the stories and everything else, and how they loved the movie The Moonrise Kingdom.
Yes.
Have you seen that movie? Mm. What a great movie. Oh, my God. So they want to base the whole wedding on that movie and their experiences camping as kids. And one thing that the bride really wanted, to surprise everyone with bouncy house.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah. But they also have this amazing thing that they want to do the Moonrise Kingdom, kind of like a memory tent. In that tent, they want to portray their whole childhood, all the people who passed away, all their memories, everything you can gather in that little tent.
That's a cool idea.
Yeah, we went to Brimfield. I think you were new at that time, and we went to Brimfield, and I went just specifically to get preps for that event.
Yeah.
And I get this little...
You were really excited about that event for a while. Yeah,
because I watched that movie a couple of times and I was obsessed with that movie. It was so good. So I tried to match all the props as close as possible. So I got this little cut and got almost exact same table, those little lanterns, like those little props. So
is this a Wes Anderson movie?
Yes.
It must be.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Kind of quirky, but
yeah,
really
there's
cool.
Like two kids, right?
Yes,
it's
they run
like
away.
A love story, sort of. Yeah. And that's
they're
like
pre-teenage years.
Yeah.
First in love thing happening.
yeah, it's a sweet movie.
Yeah. So we did set up this tent at Gather Green. And I did all the props and just, they brought thousands of pictures. Mm-hmm. And I kind of displayed them all over the places. And they have those like little memorabilia and like Pendleton blankets and all those little things. And that was on Friday. I was setting it up in the morning and her parents came in just to check on me. And they came in and they burst into tears.
Oh.
And I left, I had to You're leave like- the tent. I didn't even finish, but they were so emotional. They felt like it was like, oh my God, this is what she wanted, and this is totally like this is incredible.
Nailed
like,
it.
Like all the memories, even like the shelves and the chairs, everything we rented. The rugs was supposed to remember like their parents, grandparents, their families, and also that movie.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. Did you stay in budget to doing that too?
I don't think there was a budget. That was a good thing. There was no budget.
Good thing.
I think it's important to do something like that too, that you don't try. I mean, because that's just not a regular wedding. That's an entire experience, and you need to be able to just let the artist have the freedom and obviously work with them for inspiration.
All they wanted was really celebrate the family and friends, so they invited their 230 best friends and family. It was an exceptional wedding. And they we put this like banners in a tent that signify their love of cats and whom they want to be in the future, and everything else in that pavilion was supposed to be almost like when you go to the camp and you go to the where you eat
canteen.
Yeah, like all those tables, like long tables, yeah, and yeah. there all the kids sit there. That's what you set up.
Oh. That's
and
awesome.
We had those like really cool mid-century plates we found, and all those glasses. That was like 1950s wedding. Yeah. It was insane. Cool. Yeah. So we had this ceremony at a quarry, which is like a little bit further away from the pavilion. So we dropped off all the shadows, dropped off all the guests at the quarry. And the quarry, you've seen it. It looks like almost like you were landing in the Mars, right?
Yeah, we did an event there.
Black shell everywhere.
Yeah.
Little hills, just so like deconstructed.
Yeah,
and
it looks like nothing else, really. It's a
I feel like
space.
It's like something on the moon.
Yeah, it feels like a different planet, truly. Yep.
So cool there.
Yeah. So we had like little truck with beverages and just like a mid-century, like little props for them. So the ceremony started, we did the ceremony, and then after ceremony, everybody went to the cocktail hour. Meantime, all the other vendors that were supposed to be a surprise came in into that quarry, and we transformed the whole quarry into something different. We put that bouncy house, we put like big screen projector and screen with like this little movie.
Wow.
We had like huge bonfire. We had like all sorts of things over there.
Wow. This is like next level wedding.
Yeah. It was incredible. I'll remember this wedding for the rest of my life. It was just so insane and so beautiful.
Yeah. I've seen some of the pictures. I mean, this Shalice Michael. Yeah, really great. Yeah, that's really fantastic. So one final question. So you sort of stumbled upon this career.
Mm-hmm. It kind of happened naturally.
Yes, right, exactly. But not intentionally. It just came upon, you know, it's like you didn't end up focusing on what you went to school for. What do you love most about being a wedding planner? Like, what is that? I mean, what is it? Why, you know, because we all know, and especially speaking to the folks out there that are in the event industry, it's a tremendous amount of work. I mean, and it's like even from somebody that is a wedding planner to someone that's even a server. I mean, they're long hours, and that's just one day for those types of people. You have a lot of work involved, people juggling many people's personalities, temperaments.
Sometimes it's 2 years of juggling that and just dancing with the psychology of those people and their parents and their siblings and everybody else.
It's taxing on many levels. And so what is it that feeds you to make you want to continue to do this? Like what, because there has to be some return, something must be feeding you. And I don't want a boilerplate answer. I want like something genuine here. So
I think because you connect with those people and totally get it at some point, it takes a while to get it and connect and click.
Mm.
But once you do, it makes the whole difference. Yeah, and then everything is easy.
It's like they trust you. They know that you get the vision.
Yeah. And then they all tell, because I don't really do traditional weddings. I don't do boilerplate cookie cutter weddings. I just don't. I don't do it. There's nothing wrong with them, but I just don't do it.
It's not your style.
Not my style. And the weddings I do, I try to learn about the couple and make that event truly that expresses them.
Yes.
Not necessarily traditional wedding. And
right. That's what's personalized. Some,
yeah,
it
very
means
personal.
Something. See, it's very special.
And then let's say they will tell me they're like, I don't know, wildflowers. And then we connect those wildflowers or the love of cows or something else into that design of whom they are.
Yes.
And then it makes it even more special, whether it's like a menu design or escort cards or something on the table. That's everybody was like, oh, that's them. That's totally them. Mm. You know, I want to know that about them and then execute it the day of.
Yeah.
And when I see it the day of and everything is coming to life, and you see the happiness, and everybody's just like, totally makes sense. And then you see that on their faces, the couple's faces, and it's just the most incredible feeling. And then towards the end of the night, you see how everything, you know, goes, well, according, they probably think everything went down, you know, like, as it's supposed to, according to the plan, it never does.
Yeah.
At the end of the night, when you see everything just, like, come to an end, And that's the moment, that's the most rewarding moment when they give you that big hug.
Mm.
And look in your eyes and they'll tell you, like, we couldn't have done it without you.
Yeah.
It's right? Beautiful.
You've seen it too.
Yes.
You know that feeling that's... It's you can't compare to anything.
No, and that's the reason what it is. It's like the ultimate.
It's not even about the money or anything. No. It's just that moment sometimes, that day, or that thing. It's like, oh my God, you totally got our vision. Mm. Even if you present them the mood board, it's like, you totally got it. And it's just like, yes. That's what I do it.
Right on. Release. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, you just totally came to life as you were describing
100%. It. 100%. Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, like, that was actually, right, I was going to tell you that off camera. But yeah, I mean, you huge, all smiles, looking back and forth.
Yeah.
So you can tell folks that's what being because genuine looks like.
Because sometimes it's a long road to get to that point because you can't get them. And it's just like you try to figure it out. Like how to communicate with them. What do they want? Mm-hmm. What do they desire? Mm. Besides what your mom desires from that wedding because she's paying or, you know, like all those little things.
Yeah, how do you work with that? How do you work around all that? So many different dynamics. That's a whole other skill set.
Yeah, for sure.
You have to have your nerves made of steel or how they say it. That's
Pretty
close. Good enough, yeah. So now talking about a whole other different set of skills, COVID.
Oh
yes.
My God.
How are you going to use your creativity to adapt into this new time?
You know, we did a few weddings this year, and we tried to come up with some creative things to, you know, to obey all the rules and state and make sure that everybody's safe.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy, but the first wedding we did was the micro wedding in June. That was, I think, right after we got all those restrictions. We were able to do 10 people, I think, at a wedding. We did this absolutely amazing micro wedding.
Cool.
We had 150 people on Zoom, 10 people at the wedding.
Nice.
But all those people on Zoom were part of the wedding. I think the ceremony was about 1 hour, but the portion of it was like 7 blessings in Jewish tradition, ceremony. So those people were part of that. 7 blessings
smart.
On Zoom so everybody else could see it. And then we kind of tied into all the toasts and speeches, and that was just absolutely incredible. I had tears in my ass every 5 minutes when I was just like sitting there and just witnessing it and making sure, you know, we are, everybody's plugged in at the same time. It was just really intricate. We ran it like a few times, but it was just so absolutely rewarding to see it at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's just insane, yeah. But coming back to your question, so sometimes you do have to get creative. And that June wedding was like the first wedding where we had to like really brainstorm how we can do it.
Mm. Right.
We did a couple more weddings, but it's really hard to predict what's going to happen next year.
So this season was pretty much a wash. You did maybe 3.
I think I did 4, maybe, yeah. A couple of them was this year's, and a couple, 2 or 3 were, like, new ones, like micro weddings, just like a last minute, you know.
So what does the future look like, in your opinion? What is spring 2021 look like?
Very good question, and I have no answer for it. I don't know. Yeah. It's really hard to predict. I don't think, my gut tells me spring weddings won't happen. If they do, it will be still restricted to whatever restrictions we have right now.
Mm.
It's not going to get better, even if the, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to say it's not going to get better. I'm sure it's going to get better. But, you know, even if we have vaccine, who will be able to take it? Who will take it?
Yeah, more importantly is who will take it.
Who will take it? Will we still have restrictions? What will states do? Like, we don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right now, I have a couple of weddings in June that are 250 plus.
Yeah.
And I already had those conversations with them, like, please create plan, you know, list A, B, and C, and invite, you know, we have to invite everyone, but maybe let them know, but we don't know if you can be part of it.
Yeah.
Right. We still love you. We still want you to be part of it.
But you're the first ones to go when it comes to
that. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
In the nicest way possible.
Yeah. And I'm really cautious about, like, do I want to take more weddings for next year?
I know.
There's so much postponed from this year to next year, and I still have to pay my bills. You know, I have to think about that, the business, how will I survive if 10 of my weddings postpone to next one, and I only take 14 a year. So really, it's really hard.
Yeah, right, exactly. And then it's just, I mean, it's hard to think. And then what is the pivoting, the way to handle surviving, you know, if you can't have events and what restaurants are doing. I mean, Massachusetts just...
Yesterday, right?
Yep, changed all the regulations again, kicked everything down.
25 people in outdoor gatherings.
Yeah. And was how many people inside? Did you see what that...
I don't know,
I think
inside,
it's like 10 people maybe? Yeah. I'm not 100% on that, folks.
10 inside, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see.
We'll see, and it's just we'll figure it out.
Yeah, in the meantime, we just kind of deal with things day by day.
But you know what? I think people went crazy about micro weddings. They found, they saw a different way.
See, this
I think
is
we
interesting.
Talked about
it. Yeah, this is interesting to me because it was something that was kind of taking off or starting to catch on before COVID hit, right?
Yeah.
And it turned out that this turned out to be a good format for weddings.
Yeah, I think a lot of people went really crazy about micro weddings because some of them may be shy, some of them don't want to, you know, deal with their family, or some of them just want to have like really nice intimate wedding, something that it's really meaningful.
Yeah.
And I think it's kicking off right now because pre-COVID, I was getting those inquiries for like 250, 300 wedding per person weddings. And right now I'm getting 50 person wedding or less.
Yeah.
So I think people realizing might not be able to have bigger weddings, but they also understand, you know what? That's totally fine.
Yeah.
We can have our closest friends and family. Mm-hmm. We can still do it. We can still start a family, you know, get married, start family, and still can be incredible and intimate and really nice.
Yeah.
And it's really inspiring because sometimes I feel like those big weddings, they lose their meaning, like what the relationship should be. This marriage celebration should be, because everybody wants to put up a show.
I see the value in both. You know, definitely it goes back to, we've talked about this being introverts. You know, an introvert is generally going to have want a smaller party.
Right.
Where there are some folks that want to have everybody they've ever met.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, absolutely. So I just want to make sure we're not
taking it away from that. And I love those parties. Yeah. I love those big parties. They're so exciting and there's so much cool energy in there.
Totally,
I love it.
Totally. Yeah. But there is something also special about the smaller events, for sure, in a different way.
So I wouldn't feel bad, at, you know, like if those couples have to scale it down. Mm-hmm. That's totally fine. And you can still make it special and really different.
Yeah.
And intimate, and people will remember it. Yeah. And you'll remember it, and you'll feel it differently, as if you were in front of 200 people.
Absolutely.
And perform, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's different.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's
a feels like energy. Another cool way to channel creativity.
Yeah. So no matter what, it's going to be amazing, fabulous, and it's going to be
fantastic.
Great.
Fantastic. Well, Magdalena, I want to thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome.
This was really great for you to come and spend
the evening.
I could
talk about it all the time.
I know, you could. Well, obviously.
I know. Hey, I feel like we just scratched the surface.
Absolutely. There's so much to be told, and I hope you'll join us again at some point in time.
I would love to,
Why don't you tell the lovely folks out here some of your social media contacts, your website, all that stuff, so they know where to find you.
Website is magdalenaevents.com. And Instagram, Magdalena_events. You can probably find me on James's Instagram.
We
do,
lots of work together.
Yes.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff to be seen.
Because there's one thing, like if you work with someone so many times, you develop this trust and you work with so many vendors.
So important.
It's really important because you know what to expect. Some couples may be shy in front of the camera. Then you know what photographer to get them.
Sure.
You know someone who make them laugh and comfortable.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You develop those teams that you really love to work with and you have great experience and you just know.
In a way, I sort of envy you in that way because you're creating the perfect team each time, like you're putting together a sports team.
But that team is directed towards the client.
Exactly.
You know? Maybe they don't like the lush flowers and they like more organic, so I know what flowers to get them.
Absolutely.
And I already work with them and I know what to expect and what the pricings to expect, you know?
Absolutely.
And what kind of vibe they want to develop. It's just
Where do you know what to expect if you hire Heirloom Fire and have James?
Yes. I hesitated because I want to say something funny.
I know, that's kind of what I was hoping for.
Joke's on you, I'm the one who edits this thing, so.
Damn it.
We'll dispute it. We'll comment on the thing.
Yeah, nice.
Nice. You guys should totally head over, check out Magdalena's website, check out our Instagram. So many beautiful, inspiring things out there.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Fantastic.
Totally. You can definitely get a sense of Magdalena's passion and love for what she does on her social media and on her website. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fantastic. And Simeon, to let the people in who to your life through social media that don't know already.
Chef Simeon, that's my Instagram handle. And you can also find me on some little cameo videos on YouTube. If you type in Chef Simeon, you might find something funny. here or there.
He's funny.
Very talented. If you guys have ever heard the little beatboxing at the end of the videos, that is Simeon. He had a former life and still maintains all those talents.
I've seen it.
Yeah, absolutely. Just earlier today, we were doing the sound check. Yeah. And of course, my name is James Gopp. My Instagram handle's at heirloomfire, website www.heirloomfire.com, and my personal Instagram handle is at Chef James Gopp. Thank you all for tuning in this evening, and we'll see you the next time on Figuratively Feasting.
Bye-bye.
Bye.